Welcome back to the second hour of 2 hours of Jewish soul music. And if you heard the first hour, I know some of you are just coming on now to hear Chazonus, but this is going to be preempted for this evening because this is a special tribute to Reb Shlomo Kalbach, who died 15 years ago on this, well, it was not exactly this date. This is October 26th, 2009. His funeral was on October 23rd, 1994. I was listening to those interviews and I was thinking to myself, yes, I got to get the phones working again. Later on, during the second hour, you'll hear some comments about what happened just a few days before the program was aired. Rabbi Kalbach died on Thursday, but on Wednesday, terrorists in Tel Aviv blew up a bus, and they killed, let's see, how many was it? They killed 23, and 75 were injured. Horrible terrorist attack in Tel Aviv on October 19th, Wednesday of 1994. So that's what will be referred to during the second hour. There is an op-ed by A.M. Rosenthal that will refer to that. In the meantime, let's get back to the Kalbach special. Again, I'm just playing from 15 years ago, a program from October 23rd, 1994.
My friend Velvel Pasternak with his reminiscences of the late Reb Shlomo. And in the obituary yesterday in the Times, in the last year, Rabbi Kalbach gave concerts in Morocco, Australia, France, Germany, Austria, and Israel, of course, as well as the United States. He was born in 1925 in Berlin, where his father, Naftali, was an Orthodox leader. The family, which fled the Nazis in 1933, lived in Switzerland before coming to New York in 1939. His father became the rabbi of a small synagogue on West 79th Street, Congregation Kehilat Jacob. Shlomo Kalbach and his twin brother Eli Chaim took over the synagogue after their father's death in 1967. He studied at the Yeshiva Torah Vadat in Brooklyn and at the base Medresh Gavoa in Lakewood, New Jersey. From 1951 to 1954, he worked as a traveling emissary of the Grand Rabbi of Lubavitch, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson. During that period, he also picked up a guitar and began writing songs and visiting coffee houses and clubs in Greenwich Village, where he met Bob Dylan, Pete Seeger, and other folk singers. They encouraged his singing career and helped the rabbi get a spot at the Berkeley Folk Festival in 1966. After his appearance, he decided to remain in the Bay Area to reach out to what he called lost Jewish souls, runaways, and drug-addicted youth. He founded a commune synagogue called the House of Love and Prayer. Here's a quote. "If I would have called it Temple Israel, nobody would have come," he said. "I had the privilege of reaching thousands of kids. Hopefully I put a little seed in their hearts." 11 years later, he closed the House of Love and Prayer and took the remnants of the congregation to Israel. We established the small settlement of Moshav or Modi'in in Lod near Ben-Gurion Airport. The settlement now has about 35 families. Rabbi Kalbach is survived by his wife, Nila Kalbach, and two daughters, Neshama and Nadara, all of Toronto, and a sister, Shulamith Lavovitz of Muncie, New York. Let's hear one selection that certainly is, well, it's not, hundreds are well known to us, but this one we sing in our shul quite frequently on Shabbos.
Me
Shlomo Kalbach. You tuned in late, and in case you are not aware, Reb Shlomo Kalbach died Thursday night. His funeral was this morning. His body is on its way to Israel, perhaps has landed in Israel by this time. We've been dedicating this first hour and perhaps part of the second hour to the great Reb Shlomo.
I have with me on the phone a young man from Borough Park by the name of Yerachmiel Eller, who was a great fan of Shlomo's, of Reb Shlomo. Good evening.
Hi.
Yerachmiel, I understand you went to the funeral today.
Yes, at the Shlomo Shul on 79th Street, Manhattan. And I came kind of late, I'd say about 9:45, even though the services started at 9 o'clock. The hundreds, maybe thousands of people outside, their umbrellas was raining quite a bit, and there was a loudspeaker outside, and you could hear the hespedim, the eulogies over the loudspeaker quite clearly, and there were some young boys, or young Hasidim, adherents of Shlomo's, who gave their thoughts about their relationship with Shlomo, and some of them became choked up in the middle, and they were crying, and one or two were actually singing some of his songs, and that's how close they fell to him. And then there was the usual Kale Mole, which was said very well at the end. And then the entire crowd at the very end of the service began to follow the hearse. And as the people were following the crowd, as the crowd was following the hearse, some of the people began to actually sing some of Shlomo's songs, and there was particularly one there, Lule Sarasla Shashuai Ozavarti Vonyi, I think maybe you know it. La ra 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 di ra ra da ra 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 ra, and it just kept on going for blocks as the entire crowd was following.
Wow.
You would think at a funeral service, where do you hear music? But yet it was very appropriate, and I was thinking to myself, you know, David HaMelech, who composed this verse, it's in Kufiyat Tes, 119 in the Psalm, had Ruach HaKodesh to compose the words, and I said to myself, Shlomo had Ruach HaKodesh to compose the music to the words. And somebody once told me that Shlomo sang this before Rav Aaron Kotler, of blessed memory, who used to be the Rosh Yeshiva in Lakewood, and every time Shlomo sang it for him, Rav Aaron began to cry. He was moved by it.
Interesting.
That's the way it was. The people were following in, with respect, and they were singing the song, and it was very moving, the entire Levaya. You had cross-sections of Jewish people from all over. You had Hasidim, and you had people who didn't have hats. You had young mothers with their children, and, with their husbands, and one young lady came with her child, and she even had a dog. You know, it just showed how informal the entire thing was, and yet everybody came to pay respect.
Yeah, and the universal appeal that he had.
Yes, universal appeal for everyone. The music is just so great. The music will live forever. There's no question about it.
I understand that you are quite a fan of his.
Oh, always. I've always been. The music is very moving, and it's very inspirational. And you can adapt much of the music to some of the services in shul, you know, like on Shabbos, you can sing Mim Komcha for it, or Lecha Dodi. There are many songs. If you read the obituary in yesterday's Times,
yes,
you remember he says there that his songs are sung at bar mitzvahs and the weddings and Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox. But it's not only at bar mitzvahs and weddings; it's sung practically every Shabbos by anybody who knows any of Shlomo's music,
right?
And he's very inspiring, and the music is absolutely enchanting, and as I just said, it'll live on and on.
Did you ever meet him?
Yes, I've met him several times, and
he had a certain magnetism.
Oh, yes, no question about it. He was very approachable, that was the thing. Some rub on him, they're aloof, and they're very well-versed in learning, but somehow they keep a distance. But Shlomo was not that way. He was very appealing, and that's why he appealed to, let's say, people who are on the fringes of religious orthodoxy. And I'm sure he attracted quite a few hundred, and who maybe those who were on the borderline, the music, actually convinced them to become religious.
Interesting.
Question about it.
Interesting. Yerach Biel, thank you for taking the time to share these thoughts with us.
Okay, thank you, Charlie.
Okay.
Before Velvel mentioned the album Mikdash Melech in the Palace of the King, which came out quite a few years ago, and maybe 20, 25 years ago, but it was with Benedict Silberman, chorus and orchestra, and it's out on the tape and CD, and as Velvel says, it's one of the better recordings. So it's we're not saying they're his greatest songs, but the recording is that magnificent. Let's hear V'yismachu v'cho Yisrael, give true joy to those who live to hallow your name. Reb Shlomo Kalbach, and we'll be coming back to our special in memory of the late Reb Shlomo, who died this past Thursday. Well, this is the last day that I'll be talking about. Well, we're back at 2009. I was getting to say that that's the last time that I'll be announcing my cantorial concert that was taking place the following week. That was my third annual
concert at the State Theater in New Brunswick, New Jersey, going back to 1994. Wow. With Naftali Herzlik, David Bagley, and Alberto Mizrahi with Danny Gildar. So, Benny, I was, you know, I ran a few concerts. We didn't make any money in those days either. Four very wonderful, successful concerts, though. But what can I tell you? It wasn't meant to be well, they were meant to be to expose people to the wonderful world of Chazonus. Anyway, let's get back to the recording of, this is from my program of October 23rd, 1994, 15 years ago.
With me on the phone, an old friend, Chaim Wasserman, who is the rabbi of the Young Israel of Passaic. Good evening, Rabbi.
Good evening, Charlie. How are you?
Okay. I understand you were at the funeral this morning of Reb Shlomo.
Yeah, very much so. And the essence of the funeral, for anyone who wasn't there, is its uniqueness. Did you ever attend a singing funeral?
No.
No. Well, every one of his tunes was sung. Once one of those who delivered the eulogy would quote from that particular area of Tehillim or wherever he would use his lyrics, it is an unusual feeling, just as unique as this man was. He's probably the most prolific songwriter in Jewish music ever. So too was this uniqueness of his funeral, where they sang him to his final resting place, which I suppose if someone could choose the way one wants a funeral, this would be the way Shlomo Kalbach would have wanted it.
You knew Reb Shlomo?
I knew him for close to 40 years. In the very beginning, I met him when he started to sing his songs, and people wanted it played at weddings. There was a dilemma. Only the New York scene was able to play these weddings. We had those bands who played it. What do you do if you're getting married in Little Rock, Arkansas, or in Florida? And one of the earliest encounters I had with him is he would sing, and I would show him that I'd write out the music and send it to various youngsters all over the country who would give it to bands playing his music. And we struck up a friendship that way that lasted up until 2 weeks ago today, when he and I did a dialogue in Passaic, Clifton, and he was a vintage Shlomo, but nonetheless tired. And as tired as he was, he kept driving till the very last moment. There was no such thing as stopping by him.
He certainly had a full schedule. He didn't stop traveling throughout the world.
Yeah, there's only one thing that really shocked me. Although I knew it, but the shock at the funeral, one of his good friends, Professor Zalman Schachter of the University of Manitoba, who also started the outreach with Shlomo Kalbach 35, 40 years ago, and was moved by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, indicated to the thousands who were there, I clearly saw that it was thousands, that he gave everything away, not only of himself, not only of his neshama, but all of his worldly possessions. This man has a family now, a wife and two children, who have to be remembered and have to be supported. Children who need an education to finish to finish polishing school.
Wow.
And that's a tough one. Here you have a man that has touched hundreds of thousands of people, but touched with the gift of life. And it's time, I suppose, and we were reminded by Professor Zalman Schachter over there, that it's time to give back what the man has invested in all of society.
Well, that's fascinating. It's sad, but something you might expect from him.
Yeah, I mean, sad by American standards, but clearly within the realm of his personality, and wouldn't have had it any other way.
Do you have any other anecdotes of your experiences with him?
Well, one of my first experiences also with him left a scar on one of my fingers of the left hand because of a broken key on a piano And it was probably, and we kept on playing, I at the piano, he at the guitar, and I split my finger on this broken key, and was probably one of the few pianos ever that had red, white, and black keys. And I had mentioned at Shabbos and Shul that I bear Shlomo Kalbach with me on my body all throughout life. Since then,
interesting.
I've had this problem.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Rabbi Wasserman, thank you for sharing these reminiscences with us.
Charlie, you got to do it. The man earned it, and I hope we hear. Oh, I must, before I let you go.
Yes.
Tell you one other thing. The same Zalman Schachter lapsed into a Yiddish moment, and he spoke to Shlomo. He said, Shlomo, before you go into Gan Eden, don't let them fool you into a concert before you demand from God that he give to Bnei Yisrael what they need now. I know you, Shlomo. They're going to fool you into giving them a concert. Don't you dare start singing until you demand that God look down on his people and give them what they need. Shalom al Yisrael.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Be well.
Thank you.
And keep strong.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That was my friend, our friend, Rabbi Chaim Wasserman of the Young Israel of Passaic. And I have with me on the phone Chaim from Queens. Hello, Chaim.
Hello. I just wanted to say one thought that I'm sorry I never called up Shlomo and told him about this after hearing much of his music many years. But I had some canaries in the house here, some birds we had for a while for my kids. And these canaries used to sing along with music, good Jewish music. And certain records they sang very little with, and certainly sang a little more. As soon as I put on one of Shlomo's tapes, even a tape where he says just a story, they would sing with it. They would go wild with singing songs. And it's a natural phenomenon. I just want to say that in music he was a chad bedara. He was a chad bedara. He was unique that all of his music really corresponded to the meaning of the words. And it's a shame that there seems right now absolutely no one to replace him.
Well, it's true. But we pray that someone will rise to the occasion.
Maybe collectively all of our people will arise in song and mitzvah.
Okay. Thank you for your comments.
Ira koinesh, imero.
were listening to Reb Shlomo Uvenei Yerushalayim. This was recorded live in Israel. And I have with me on the phone a promises to be a very interesting call, Rabbi Eliezer Garner from Staten Island. Good evening, Rabbi.
Good evening. How are you?
Okay. Tell our audience a little bit about your relationship with Reb Shlomo.
Well, I originally met Shlomo in San Francisco during the late 60s. As you know, there was a big counterculture movement at that time, the hippies and everything, and a lot of them migrated to San Francisco. And there was a great deal of alienated Jewish youth, a great amount of alienated Jewish youth had were also there in San Francisco in Haight-Ashbury. And Shlomo came at that time, and he was one of the only rabbis that appealed to the youth of that time. And he literally pulled us off the streets.
You were a hippie?
I guess you could say that, yes, at that time, yes. He literally turned us on to Judaism, to Shabbos, basically to Shabbos. We used to have a house 11 prayer that Shlomo supported, and we had hundreds of kids on a Friday night dancing and singing Shlomo's Nagunim. And my wife and I both became religious at that time through Shlomo. And I wanted to share that with everybody and the audience, that as much as Shlomo is known for his music, as not much as he's known for the Nagunim, he was a great Rebbe, a great leader for many, many youth of the 60s and the 70s. And he brought hundreds, and if not thousands, back to Yiddishkeit and left us a legacy about Judaism that we now would like to pass on to our children.
I understand you were a pallbearer today?
Yes, I was. I carried the casket of my holy Rebbe Shlomo.
Wow.
And we feel like a great light has passed on, but as my wife said tonight, and one of the most beautiful things I've heard all day, she said that maybe with the situation in Israel now, the situation in the world, that Shlomo could not continue to do as much work down here as needed to be done, and so he went to heaven.
Hmm.
To turn on the energy there to bring us down, to turn the energy around, to bring down great blessings to the Jewish people, and to make this a better world. He needed to go to a higher level to accomplish that task.
Wow, that's quite a thought. Quite a thought.
I appreciate you doing this tribute to him tonight.
Well,
and I feel that that is a great honor to him, and nothing could be better than tonight to do this. Play his music, and I hope maybe by the Shloshim another time you will also do this.
Well, I have to tell you, I know you were a new listener to my show, but I'm starting my 18th year, and regular listeners know that Reb Shlomo Kalbach was one of my favorites, and I have played him continuously over the years and will continue as long as I have the ability and the strength to do it. He turned me on also, I have to tell you. Rabbi Garner.
Eliezer Garner.
Eliezer Garner. Thank you for calling and sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you.
Okay, shalom.
Bye.
It's 9:30, and I thank you all for your calls and your thoughts, and I'm sure that we'll do it again. I could go on for several shows, and as Rabbi Garner mentioned, we probably should have something again. We will have something more well planned and well thought out. This is something that I just wanted to put together today. And, you don't know what to say or what to do when something like this happens. And just a blessing that we have this wonderful music that will live on perhaps or hopefully forever. Well, this past week was certainly a very difficult week for all of us, those of us who are Jews, those of us who love Israel, those of us who love freedom and justice. I was trying to think of what could I say that's appropriate, and you know my feelings about Israel and about the situation there. We'll be playing some Chazonis in a few minutes that is appropriate. But I'd like to read an op-ed from Friday by A.M. Rosenthal, because I think it hits the nail on the head in many respects. It's called Terror and the West.
This is Charlie. I'm just interrupting from this recording of October 23rd, 1994. As I mentioned earlier in the program, just a few days ago, prior to this recording of 1994, October 19th, that was Wednesday, terrorists boarded a bus in Tel Aviv. They killed 23 and 75 were injured. Of course, when they say 75 injured, we don't know how many of those ended up dying from their injuries. But he's referring to the terrorist attack in Tel Aviv of October 19th, 1994. A.M. Rosenthal, he certainly was sorely missed. And those of you who followed my program with Helen Friedman, Israel Update, and you know my feelings about the New York Times. Stopped reading the New York Times about 8 or 10 years ago, and I tell you that life can be beautiful without the New York Times. It's very hard to take, very, very hard to take. But let's get to the A.M. Rosenthal article. There's another subheadline, Time to Get Off the Bus. The bus creeps along, stops an instant for a traffic signal, and disintegrates. Later, police have a difficult time separating the bits of bone, deciding which belong to the corpses of passengers and which to the people torn apart in their offices and shops on Madison Avenue. Madison Avenue. Is that what it will take? Would Americans then understand the meaning to them of what happened in Tel Aviv? Would we grasp that we are not bystanders far off, but traveling on the road to our own Dizengoff Street? Probably not. Pan Am 103 and the vaporization of 270 souls did not make us see the road or who awaited us. Nor did the extermination of the 241 U.S. servicemen and 58 French paratroopers in the Beirut massacre, or the deaths of 95 Argentine Jews in Buenos Aires. Not even the bombing of the World Trade Center, the essence of American financial prestige, stirred people for more than a month or two. All these terrorist attacks and scores more were the work of Islamic extremists. Except for brief bursts of indignation, the West has shown a passivity that shames its leaders, people, and civilization. The only explanation is that the West fears confronting terrorism straight on. To do that, the West would first have to face realities that would embarrass some of its Arab allies. That could wind up costing diplomatic advantage and money. Terrorists say that their target is Israel, but if they ever reach their goal of the end of Israel, terrorism will continue. The struggle is not primarily against Israel, but the Western concepts of freedom of thought, religion, sexual equality, and political action. Islamic extremists see them as a disease and Israel as a carrier. For the terrorists, there is also a continuing enemy within Islam. All Muslims and Muslim governments that defy the laws, behavior, and restrictions of Islam as they exist in the passions of the extremists. Other religions will be openly ranked with Judaism as objects of disgust, unclean, destined for oblivion or servitude. The public practice of Christianity is already considered so vile and dangerous that it is banned in Saudi Arabia. In Israel, Gaza, and the West Bank, Hamas now burns the torch of terrorism. Yasser Arafat deplores the current killings and maybe means it politically at the moment. He tried, despite Hamas's record and after the White House lawn agreement with Israel, to get closer to Hamas. But he cannot control it, or his own Palestine Liberation Organization, which is supposed to police Hamas. When independence or full autonomy comes, PLO members might very well choose Hamas over Mr. Arafat. Perhaps Hamas, which proclaims brotherhood with the PLO, will find a job for him someplace.
Confronting terrorists means confronting their masters. Iran supplies the money, guns, and explosives, and Syria the haven and training grounds. Washington and Israel play down Syrian involvement in terrorism in their passion to get President Assad to sign a peace treaty. He is so contemptuous of both countries that he has never disbanded the Hamas branch in downtown Damascus, nor the 9 terrorist groups bivouacked in Syria and Lebanon. What's more, financing and arming of Hamas and similar groups extends beyond the Middle East, particularly to the U.S. The Department of Justice says the FBI is getting on the job. Anti-terrorist specialists know what could be done given the will. First, the U.S. and Israel would tell Syria to close every terrorist camp and give up hope of a treaty, which it needs more than Israel. Western friends of Iran would be told, do business with them or us, not both. U.S. intelligence would release names of the collection of Mideast officials who have supplied or still are supplying terrorism with money, guns, or protection, all of them, kings and emirs included. All are entirely doable and effective once the West decides to stop the bus before it gets to Madison Avenue. Well, Rosenthal does hit the nail on the head. Can you imagine? They tried to kill many thousands right here at the World Trade Center. And it was a miracle that more were not killed. It was their intent to destroy the entire building or the 2 buildings and kill everyone located in the buildings at that time. It was only a miracle that they did not succeed, but let's never forget what their intent was. And yet we go blithely along, ignoring the signals that Hamas terrorists are among us. By the way, these comments are mine and not necessarily those of the staff and management of WSOU, nor are they necessarily the opinion of the faculty or the administration of Seton Hall University or of any of its components. I believe that we must focus on several key points. First, the fact that Arafat is incapable of delivering peace. The fact that Hamas is being supplied by Syria and Iran. The fact that the PLO has as its main goal and destruction the destruction of Israel. They have never repealed the statement within their charter that calls for the destruction of Israel, and it remains patently clear to me that the PLO has as its goal the destruction of the state of Israel. We must also keep in mind the fact that Rabin and Peres are placing the safety of Israel in jeopardy by rushing ahead to, as the late Rabbi Kahane used to say, to make a pact with the devil. And incredibly, it appears that our own President Clinton is rushing to Syria to also make a pact with the devil. What should we do besides prayer? Well, I think one thing we must do is let our brethren in Israel know that we are with them and that we support them despite what Rabin and Peres are bringing upon them. There is a prayer, Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael, our brothers, the entire family of Israel who are delivered into distress and captivity, whether they are on sea or dry land, may the Omnipresent One have mercy on them and remove them from distress to relief, from darkness to light, from subjugation to redemption, now, speedily, and soon. And let us say Amen. Let's hear Yossel Rosenblatt with Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael.
Yeah.
Well, that was Yossele Rosenblatt with Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael. And this is Charlie Bernhout back on October 26, 2009. And the program that you've been listening to was primarily made up of selections and portions of my program of October 23rd, 1994, 15 years ago, Sunday night. That was the day, the evening of... the day of Shlomo Kalbach's funeral. A lot was happening during that period, obviously, and the Tel Aviv bombing had occurred on Wednesday. Reb Shlomo died on Thursday, and you heard my reading of A.M. Rosenthal's comment about the situation there. And, you know, concerning the terrorist bombing of the North Tower of the World Trade Center just a year before that, many of you may be aware that the, I can't think of his name at the moment, but the terrorist who killed Rabbi Kahane, if they had, Rabbi Meir Kahane, had they looked into his papers that were in his apartment, that they were in Arabic, they would have seen that there were plans at that time to blow up the World Trade Center during that period. And of course, who knows, if they were able to stop it then, perhaps they could have stopped it. It's hard to believe that people... just didn't believe that they would try again. But I guess in hindsight, everybody is an expert. the Kalbach Shul is having a special Shabbos this coming Shabbos, commemorating the 15th Yahrzeit of Reb Kalbach, Reb Shlomo Kalbach. And there is a concert that will be at the West Side Institutional Synagogue. The West, WSIS, it's easier, West Side Institutional Synagogue, which is at 120 West 76th Street. That's Moshe Shabbos. And if you heard earlier, Rabbi Naftali Citrin mentioned the all-star cast of singers. I'll be there with Helen and with Boruch and with Rachel, and I hope to see you there. You can get tickets in advance by going to their website. Obviously, if you're listening to this program, you have a computer. You can go to www.karlbachshul.org, C-A-R-L-E-B-A-C-H-S-H-U-L, karlbachshul.org. Order tickets. If you take care of it today, you'll get a $10 discount. If not, okay, so you'll help the cause at the door. And there'll be a great Friday night dinner and commemoration, if you will. I was going to say celebration. Although we do celebrate his life, don't we? So I hope to see you there also on Friday evening at the Kalbach Shul on West 79th Street. Just a note, this coming week, I had my dates mixed up. Itzhamir Helfgott's daughter will be married in Israel this week, and we certainly wish him and his entire family only the best, mazel tov, and they should have a lot of nachas from the wonderful couple. I met the prospective groom at their engagement party, and he seemed like a really fine young man, a wonderful, beautiful couple, and again, only the best, Itzhamir Helfgott, to you and your wife and entire family. I should have a lot of nachas from the forthcoming wedding. Now, those of you who attended the Kumsitz this past Saturday night at the U Cafe, it was really a lot of fun. There is one planned for November 14th, again, at the U Cafe. If you want to save the date, that's November 14th. Probably won't be raining, probably will be a sellout, and more about that in the future. But I was so pleased that Zevi Muller was at the Kumsitz. And, of course, the host chazan for the evening was cantor Yossi Malavani. And I think it's appropriate that we close with a prayer from cantor Malavani. And I was trying to think what would be appropriate for this commemoration of the your side, if you will, of I don't like to say commemoration, but a tribute to Reb Shlomo Kalbach. And Kirta Malavani a few years ago did a Kael Mole Rachamim for the Holocaust, and I think it's certainly appropriate that we play that at this time. My closing cantorial selection, cantor Yossi Malavani. I'm working out the, I think I told you that I have all of these on an iPod. Let's get this working. Cantor Malavani.
Amen.
Closed with cantor Yossi Malavani doing a kalmole for the Holocaust, and certainly the kalmole was appropriate in memory of the late Reb Shlomo Kaulbach. This is Charlie Bernhout, hoping that you found this program meaningful, and look forward to seeing you this Motzei Shabbos at the Westside Institutional Synagogue at 120 West 76th Street, a tribute to Reb Shlomo Kaulbach. And if I don't see you there, come back again next week and we'll get back to our regular programming. Thank you so much for joining with me. You know how to reach me if you have any comments, requests, criticisms. cbjmusic@aol.com. That's cbjmusic@aol.com. Shalom, everyone. Thanks again for joining with me.